Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Well, good morning. It's a pleasure to be back here in the studios of Radio Vermont, WDEV, the station that I've been associated with for a good half century almost. Not quite, but pretty close. My name is Tom Beardsley, filling in this morning for Rick Singeri, and glad to be here. A little ill at ease at the whole situation. Haven't done this in quite some time, but hopefully it's like riding a bike, and I'll get back in the saddle and be able to pedal along and make my way through the next couple of hours with some interesting guests. I've got a couple of people lined up. Of course, Calvin Cutler will be along on the phone at 9:30 this morning, and we'll be talking about current events here in the state of Vermont, in the legislature in particular. A lot of things going on. Second year of the biennium, and Calvin is right on top of it, as you can imagine. There's a number of bills that are before the legislature that they just need to wrap up in the second year of the biennium and get the governor's signature before they become law. And then you and I and everybody else has to live by them. So we'll be talking with him long around 9:30 this morning for 15 or 20 minutes. And we'll cover a lot of subjects, I'm sure. So stay tuned for that if you're interested in what's happening under the Golden Dome in Montpelier and around the state, for that matter, in politics and legislative news and legal issues. Calvin will have all the information for you. Later on this morning, there's a possibility we may be chatting with an old friend about the Cog Railway over in New Hampshire. Not exactly sure about that one, but we'll see if we get that call and get that fellow lined up for a conversation about that. It could be interesting. He's done a lot of research on it and writes about it and is quite knowledgeable about it. Also, in the next hour, beginning at 10 o'clock, from 10 to 11 o'clock, a good friend of mine, Louis Mano, you may remember the phrase Mano in the Morning, or Mano and Condon in Burlington many years ago, on the radio there. Very talented, very entertaining, very energetic, and very smart fellow. He'll be coming in. We'll be chatting about the state of media in not only Vermont, but the entire country, and what's going on in radio and television and newspaper and news coverage. And we'll be chatting with Louis about a lot of things. And with Louis Mano, you never know what's going to come up and you never know what's going to happen, but it'll be fun. I can guarantee you that much. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. The phone numbers are 244-1777. That's 244-1777. Or if you're calling on a landline outside the immediate exchange, you can call 1-877-291-8255. That's 1-877-291-8255. We'd love to hear from you, whatever's on your mind. We have the lines open for all kinds of topics, whether it's political or news coverage or world and national events or local events, whatever it might be. We'd love to hear from you here on Vermont Viewpoint. Now, when I arrived at the radio station, I was greeted by Steve Cormier, the general manager of the Radio Vermont Group and WDEV, and we were having a chat out here in the hallway, and Corm gave me some news that was really some unhappy news that I want to share with you, not because I like sharing unhappy news, but because I know there's a lot of people in the immediate area around Waterbury in particular who will want to know about the passing of Peter Dean. Peter Dean was an engineer for this radio station, and I was telling Corm that his association with WDEV goes back not years, but decades. He was around in the Warren Chase years, way back when the station really was put together and made into what it is today. It may not look like much. We're in the old building on Stowe Street in Waterbury, but inside these hallways and stairways and closets and secret passageways and everything, the radio station is wired together in such a way that we can do all the programming we do at ease. There's a lot of technical considerations here, and the old AM radio station with its directional array of antennas up on Blush Hill, Peter Dean's fingerprints are all over it. Peter was the guy that he was the go-to guy. If you had a technical issue, if you needed something built or jerry-rigged or modified in one way or another to make broadcasting the kind of broadcasting that we do, which is fairly complicated, he was the guy that you would go to, and he would string it all together and put it together along with the fellows like Tom Laffin. But Peter goes back. He predates Tom here at the radio station. And just a wonderful, wonderful human being. If you ever met Peter, he's not the kind of person you just could not dislike Peter Dean. He was a terrific guy, and he was a very interesting guy. Boy, talk about someone who marched to his own drummer and took life in his own terms. Peter, for many years, didn't have an automobile, and he would walk everywhere he went around Waterbury. He'd walk up to Blush Hill to work on the transmitters at Blush Hill and the towers. And everywhere he went, you'd see Peter with his hiking boots on and his backpack. And it was a large backpack. Everything he owned, I think, was carried in that backpack for a good many years. I don't know where he lived exactly, but he had a couple of different places around Waterbury. For a while, he lived out west somewhere, Arizona, I think, Colorado, Arizona, one of those places. But he was a hiker. He was a mountain man. He was a guy that went out and enjoyed nature in Vermont to its fullest. And I had the honor of going hiking with him on many occasions. Peter and I hiked up Mount Mansfield one day, hiked along the ridge line from the chin to the nose of Mount Mansfield, and he would know all the vegetation and the berries and the types of rock. He knew all of that stuff, and he would tell you all about it. And he was extremely knowledgeable and respectful of the great outdoors in Vermont, and he really was a steward of these great natural resources that we all enjoy in Vermont. He and I hiked up Camel's Hump. We visited the site of that plane crash many years ago on the side of Camel's Hump, the military airplane that went down up there. And he knew the whole story behind it. He knew the history of it. And he would tell me about all the different trails. He knew the Green Mountain Club trails like the back of his hand. He knew where they were. He didn't need a guidebook. He didn't need a map. He just knew where all the trailheads were and where they went, what ponds you'd find along the trail side. He knew about the various lodges that you would find out in the woods on the trails. I believe he did hike the Long Trail at one point, top to bottom or one end to the other. Just a remarkable human being, a great guy with a good soul, and he will be dearly missed, no doubt, around Waterbury and the immediate area, as well as beyond. A lot of people loved Peter Dean, and I just wanted to mention his passing. He was a good friend and a real part of this community for a great many years, and certainly a huge part of this radio station for decades, years and years. I came in one morning. I was doing the early morning shift at the radio station, and I was filling in. I did do the morning shift for a few years, many years ago, but this was years later, and I was doing the early morning shift, and for whatever reason, they had decided that they were going to change the configuration in the studio from a sit-down studio to a stand-up studio. So, or vice versa. It might have been the other way around. In any event, I arrived at 3:45 in the morning to go on the air at 5:00 to sign on the radio station, and the entire control room was dismantled. Everything was disconnected, and Peter was in the process of, I guess, raising at that point the control panel, the console, from a sit-down setup to a stand-up setup. So I'm on the air an hour later, and I had to operate from an auxiliary studio across the hall, which was totally ill-equipped for such a broadcast, but Peter was in here working, and he helped me get through the shift and working on equipment that was nowhere near as capable of conducting such a show as the one in the main control room is. But that was one of my adventures with Peter Dean. Peter Dean, great fellow, passed away over the weekend, I'm told, and he will be missed, and we will think of him fondly many times in the future here at the Radio Vermont Group. A lot of things going on in the news these days. If you'd like to call, the number is 244-1777. Maybe you have a memory about Peter Dean you'd like to share. And certainly if you're calling from outside the immediate area, that number once again is 877-291-8255. 877-291-8255. We'd love to hear from you. A lot of things going on in the news these days. As I said, the legislature is in the second year of the biennium. A lot of new legislation being enacted. I understand the budget is up for consideration right now between a conference committee between the House and the Senate. We'll be talking to Calvin Cutler about that. in local issues. There's never a shortage of things to talk about in the state of Vermont. We'll be chatting with Calvin about those issues. But on a world and national stage, we have that terrible situation in Ukraine with Russia and the invasion of Ukraine. That continues to go on and will go on, no doubt, for a good long time. Everybody has opinions about that. I have to confess, the one thing that mystifies me more than anything else about that situation is the simple question of why. And I have to say, I haven't really read a great deal in depth about why Russia decided to do what they did, why Vladimir Putin decided Russia had to do what it is doing. But maybe you can explain it. Maybe you can offer an opinion as to why Russia had to move, or felt it should move, on Ukraine at this point in time, and why they're doing it in such a brutal fashion. It's a mystery to me. I fail to understand why neighbors can't be neighbors and why nations can't be neighbors and get along well with one another and just accept what they have and deal with what they have and live their lives. And this is one tragedy on a massive scale that a lot of people just simply do not understand. But the president of Ukraine has come out of it as a bit of a hero. A lot of people are looking to Zelensky now as an individual that is leading his country in quite an admirable fashion. So if you have an opinion, you'd like to offer some thoughts on that, you can call us and we'll put you on the air and you can tell us what you think about what's going on in Ukraine and elsewhere. One major change since the last time I was here, I guess last summer, is the presence of Kaya Neely in the morning. She go by Kaya Winchell or Kaya Neely? Which way do we go? Well, I'll go with Kaya Neely at this point. She'll correct me, no doubt, if I'm wrong. In any event, she sounds terrific. Kaya's been here at the radio station for a long time and always kind of made her fame as the party calendar girl. And we have the theme song, the calendar girl, and Kaya's done a great job on that. And then I guess several months ago, the decision was made to give Kaya the morning news slot and the Trading Post, and she's doing a terrific job on that. And I was real pleased to see that development take place. And I know a lot of people in the marketplace love Kaya, and have always enjoyed her on the air, and she's doing a terrific job. And I couldn't be happier to hear Kaya on the radio doing a regular shift here on WDEV. And I think, I could be wrong, but, well, there were some women in the past that did the morning news, but it was years ago. Nadine Martin, I believe, did the news. Catherine Hughes did the news for a while. But Kaya doing a regular shift and doing the Trading Post and being a real presence and a voice for everyone, but giving you a women's perspective on what's going on in the world this morning and every morning on WDEV. So congratulations to Kaya, and congratulations to Corm for making the decision to go forward with that major development here in the history of the Radio Vermont Group. Well, what's happening in the world these days? We mentioned the war in Ukraine. That's a big deal and will continue to be a big deal for a long time. If you have an opinion, we'd love to hear from you on that. Of course, we're 1 year into, a little bit more than a year into, a new presidency. After 4 years of Donald Trump, we now have President Joe Biden. Lots of opinions on President Biden and his performance in office over the past, 12 months or so, 13 months, whatever it's been. Things still dealing with COVID, the world still struggling with this pandemic, and the world as well as the United States in particular, and to mask or not mask and to get vaccinated or not vaccinated, that's major issue still, and it seems to be winding down somewhat. As you get around, you see fewer people wearing masks these days and less discussion of COVID, but it remains a topic that has to be discussed and will continue to be discussed, no doubt, for some time to come. I spent some time last winter down in North Carolina, and in North Carolina, I found that it was almost to the point where it didn't exist. Almost nobody was wearing a mask. It was, you just didn't hear much about it, and you didn't see much indication that there was, in fact, a pandemic at all. But as soon as I arrived back in Vermont, I noticed more people still masking up when going out into restaurants or grocery stores or wherever, and a lot more discussion about the whole vaccination thing. I happen to have some friends who have COVID, have encountered some people over the past several months who have come down with COVID, not directly in person, but via the phone or text message or email, just set everybody's nerves at ease here about that. I haven't been in direct contact with anyone, but I do know people that have had COVID, and I know some people that were absolutely adamant in that they did not want to get vaccinated and did not get vaccinated and then ultimately came down with COVID. They seem to be doing all right, and I think they're recovering properly and quickly, so that's good. But do you have an opinion about that? Would you like to talk about the whole pandemic, you know, the leadership that we've had in this state through Governor Scott and also the leadership on the national level with President Trump originally and now with President Biden as to where things are going with COVID? Number of issues on the national stage that we could cover today. If anyone wants to call in and voice an opinion, I guess the immigration situation on the southern border continues to heat up. Thousands of people gathering along the southern border have been gathering and will continue to do so probably for quite some time. The governor of Texas had kind of a unique approach to it. He decided to take some of the immigrants that were arriving in Texas and put them on buses and send them to Washington, D.C., which was not necessarily welcome news by the people in Washington, D.C., but nonetheless, that's where they ended up, and they're apparently sending more buses to Washington, D.C. to drop immigrants who are arriving along the southern border on the streets of the nation's capital. We'll see how that plays out over the next few months. But suffice it to say, there's a lot of people, particularly from Central and South America and other places from around the world, that are entering the United States legally or illegally along the southern border. And that has been an issue for who knows how long and will continue to be an issue, no doubt, for many years to come. Lots of things to talk about, and Fred is on the line with us from Newberry, and Fred wants to talk about whatever's on Fred's mind. Good morning, Fred. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, war is the most interesting thing. If you think about it, there's been more books and articles written about war than cooking, because war is just seems to be a human existence, or no, a human thing that started way back when we became Homo sapien, when we picked a rock up and decided that if you threw that rock, you had a weapon, and if you picked a stick up and you clubbed something with it, you had a weapon. So anyways, my theory here is, it's not my theory, there's an interesting theory, and it's called the Rubicon of War, and it's a psychological essay. And Hitler fell into the Rubicon of War when he attacked Russia. And it looks like Putin has fallen into the Rubicon of War when he attacked Ukraine and didn't realize it. Because look what's happening. He's losing. And the reason why he's losing is because he thought he had an army that could fight soldiers. And boy, was he surprised when he discovered that his army couldn't fight soldiers. I mean, he should have defeated Ukraine 4 days after he invaded, but he didn't. So what say you?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the subject in a broad sense of war in general. And it leaves me scratching my head. It leaves me wondering to myself, after many thousands of years of civilization, arming the youth of our country and sending them out into a field to slaughter one another baffles me. I just can't believe that here we are as a species after all these years of so-called civilization, and this is how we settle our disputes. It is just amazing.
You talked about the youth?
Yes.
You know, we send our youth to war. You know why we send our youth to war? Because when I was a kid and I was in the Army, we made the best soldiers.
Well,
the young make the best soldiers. And guess who makes the best soldiers? The old people make the best soldiers because they direct the young. The reason why we won World War II is because we had leadership that was excellent. And guess who they were? These guys that were leading World War II were my grandfather's age.
Yep.
They all were smart men. They all had wisdom. You can name them. I mean, it's Patton. You can name them. Eisenhower. leaders.
Yeah, they were true leaders, Fred. There's no doubt about that. But I think of it in the much more more general sense is to this is the method that nations and neighbors, I suppose, armed combat. This is the way we still settle disputes in this day and age. You would think after many years of civilization, the evolution of society, that we would have devised better ways of coming to grips with the things that divide us than actually arming one another and going out and slaughtering each other in the field of battle. That's the part that baffles me.
We do have better ways. We have negotiations. It goes on and on. You can negotiate. You can try to stop the war. But the kicker is, why did the Japanese attack the United States? Because they thought they could beat the United States if they knocked out Pearl Harbor. It's simple. Why did Hitler attack Russia? He thought he could beat Russia. And he was defeated by the weather and the ability of the Russians to arm themselves and fight him back.
All right. Well, Fred, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate your comments, and I find your insights very interesting. You're right. It's a fascinating subject and a tragic subject at the same time. The whole notion of war and why nations go to war, I think at the bottom of it, quite often, economics of one sort or another, natural resources, might be motivating these countries to cross borders and say, you have something we want, and therefore we're going to come and get it. Fred, thanks again for calling. The numbers here are 244-1777, and if you're calling from outside the immediate exchange, the toll-free number is 877-291-8255. The lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to be hearing from Calvin Cutler shortly after the half-hour break when we get an update on the news from CBS Radio News. And then we'll have Calvin on the line after that to talk about all things Vermont legislature and all things in Vermont news here on Vermont Viewpoint.
In decades past, you opened a business, hung out your shingle, and the customers came. Today, hanging out your shingle means creating an engaging website. The modern consumer is using the internet to find businesses like yours. Are you positioned so you'll rise to the top of their search? Let the Radio Vermont Group Digital Services work with you to make sure you're visible online and to target your marketing to location, demographic, and interest. Learn more at rvgdigital.com.
Once again, good morning to you and welcome to Vermont Viewpoint. The phone numbers are 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Tom Beardsley here filling in on this Monday morning, and glad to have you on board as a listener and love to have you on the air as a caller. We'll be taking calls again in a few minutes, but right now we're going to check in with the folks at WCAX Channel 3 Television. It's interesting. Channel 3 is a great television station with a long and proud history of news coverage in the state of Vermont, and I don't know where they find the people they find, but they have some extremely talented people working in their news department, not the least of which currently is Calvin Cutler, and Calvin's on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Calvin.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you so much for having me, and also likewise about WDEV. Certainly been on the air for many years, really an institution in Vermont.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's a great partnership that these two broadcast entities bring to the people of Vermont. I know everybody here at WDEV values the relationship with Channel 3. Let's get right into it, Calvin. You're deep into the legislature and everything that's happening there. Of course, the major bill of the legislature every 2 years or throughout the entire time of the legislature in its biennium is the budget, and that's what's being considered right now, and the details are being hammered out. Where do we stand as far as the state budget is concerned at the moment in the Vermont legislature?
Absolutely, Tom. So we're really kind of sprinting to the finish line here of the last 2 weeks of the legislative session as it's winding down. The House and Senate, they've both passed their respective budgets. So this week, essentially, they're going to choose lawmakers to serve on a conference committee, which is basically just a way that, you know, the two chambers will come together and hash out their differences and come to an agreement and send a bill to Governor Scott, which he ultimately will act on in one way or another. You know, lawmakers, they've said that their budgets really are a reflection of their priorities. You know, the House budget has big investments in substance use and treatment, and also our healthcare workforce. And the Senate has a lot of that as well, but also a big focus on economic development as well. So I think, you know, it's been a real long process, this legislative session, defined by huge amounts of federal cash, but also changing guidance from the federal government in where we can use some of this cash. So that's sort of where we stand with the budget. But as we've been talking about for the past few weeks, Governor Scott, he still has some very serious concerns, and he has threatened a veto of this budget in the past few weeks. And it seems like he still has those concerns. Basically, he says that, you know, both proposed budgets don't meet the economic development needs of Vermont, or it doesn't go far enough with tax relief and using some of our surpluses. So I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what will come out of the conference committee this week, and whether they do make some of these tweaks to the budget to meet the governor's concerns, or if they'll continue to go ahead and send the budget to him. As I mentioned, you know, they're hoping to adjourn by May 13th, or excuse me, May 6th. So there's really not a lot of time here, but we'll see. I think it's one of those things that we're going to have to wait and see. But last week, Senate Democrats, they top lawmakers, they said that, you know, there's always disagreements every year. That's part of the legislative process and creating the budget. But they say that they always arrive at yes.
It's a very complicated, complex document when putting together a budget for a state like Vermont. It may be a small state, but it's still a lot of money, and everybody's interested because that's your taxes. That's where that money comes from. You mentioned the governor's reluctance to necessarily sign on to the budget as it stands at the moment. I know when he campaigned back, his first campaign for governor, it was a major plank in his campaign was no new taxes. Is he still standing firm in that that area?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think one of the ways that the governor kind of is viewing, you know, philosophically using some of this money from the American Rescue Plan that's in the budget, he's really looking to make brick and mortar investments in water, sewer, housing, broadband, things that we can look back on in 20 years, 30 years and be, yes, that's right, that those investments were made during the pandemic. Whereas I think in terms of the budgets that the House and Senate have passed, although they do include huge amounts of brick and mortar infrastructure as well, there's kind of leans a little bit more toward the human services side of things, where you know, providing, you know, these substance use treatment programs, workforce development, you know, workforce benefits. That's kind of the two separations. But I think, yeah, the governor certainly is still very opposed, philosophically opposed to raising new taxes to fund some of these programs.
From your vantage point right now, Calvin, does it appear as though that May 6th date is going to be the adjournment date? Or do you think there's going to be complications that force it to go beyond May 6th?
Yeah, I think really it's a wait and see. There's definitely a lot of people within the State House that are looking to get out early and to really have a summer, so to speak, and connect with constituents. So I think it's kind of toss up at this point. I think we'll have to see what will come out of the conference committee. But there is a concern with the budget that we mentioned. But of course, there's also other underlying concerns with the pension deal as well. That certainly was a really big issue last year, and that's coming to a head. And the governor is opposed to that plan as written right now.
What can you give us some of the specifics on that? I know it's been an unfunded mandate, and it's something the state has to deal with at some point. What about the pension plan?
Exactly. You know, we're talking about this $3 billion unfunded liability for teacher and state employee retirement fund. It's, as you mentioned, it's been brewing for many years now. And, you know, there over the past maybe year and a half, there was a committee that put together this bipartisan plan to really shore up our pension fund and try to make it sustainable. You know, the unions, the House, the Senate, lawmakers, people from across the aisle were really on board with this plan. But, you know, in the past few weeks, Governor Scott, I think it was actually back in early May, or excuse me, March, that is, Governor Scott sent a letter to lawmakers saying that he would like to see a defined contribution plan as well sort of like a 401k that people would be able to sign into, along with more risk-sharing provisions. But, you know, really, I think lawmakers have pushed back on this plan and or the governor's proposal, that is, just saying that there's not enough time to really understand the effect of it and to really implement, you know, the governor's suggestions in time for the end of the legislative session. So I think right now they're still pushing ahead and, you know, they're looking to pass that bill and to send it to the governor's desk. You know, as I mentioned, he has concerns with how that plan is written right now, because it invests $200 million in one-time funds, and the governor calls that a $200 million Band-Aid. So, but unlike the budget, he has not specifically said, you know, the V word, veto, in regards to the pension plan. So I think that's going to be a really interesting one to watch over the next 2 weeks as well.
Well, let me ask you this. Do current pensioners, people who are on the retirement plan right now, they've retired a couple of years ago or whatever, and they're receiving the benefits, do they have any reason to be concerned that those benefits are not going to continue as they are into the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to clarify, this would only affect future retirees. So people that have already retired, you know, that they're receiving their pension and their health care benefits after a career of service to the state of Vermont, they would not be affected by this proposed plan. This would only affect folks going forward. They'd have to pay in a little more to the system and they would receive a little less.
All right. Great question. Great answer. Thank you for filling in. I could almost hear a collective sigh of relief out there in the audience. Let's move on, Calvin, to the medical monitoring law. I confess I know little or nothing about this. Bring me up to speed.
Absolutely. You know, this is something I think, you know, the governor really, he pointed to this in terms of a way that lawmakers can come together and reach a consensus. This one stems from the Teflon PFOA contamination in groundwater in Bennington and North Bennington back in 2016 from a Teflon plant. You know, the governor, this basically, essentially, it would let people who are exposed to toxic chemicals, it would let the corporate polluter, or it would force the corporate polluter, that is, it would force them to cover the medical monitoring costs of people who are exposed, because a lot of people in Bennington really had severe health outcomes and cancer from some of those toxic chemicals coming from the factory. So the governor had vetoed this twice before, but recently there was a $34 million settlement in Bennington where essentially, you know, Saint Gobain, the corporate polluter, they were held accountable and they had to pay out. So the governor, you know, he signed this bill into law. A lot of environmentalists and activists are really applauding that. But I think it certainly continues this conversation of, you know, our bigger questions about our lifestyle, what we consume, and how we dispose of it. Because a lot of the products that we rely on, such as ski wax or food packaging or Teflon pans for our kitchens, you know, some of those have really toxic chemicals in them. And right now it's an ongoing question of how we dispose of those.
I have to tell you, Calvin, I'm mightily impressed with your depth of knowledge on all these issues. I covered the legislature many years ago, and I know what a tough job that is. But, boy, you're doing a great job. One more question I wanted to ask you going back to the legislature, or not to the legislature necessarily, but to politics in Vermont, is having to do with the Republican Party getting together soon for their platform convention. Where is the Republican Party headed to in the state of Vermont right now?
Absolutely. So this coming weekend, so it's a little ways away, but on Saturday, they're going to be holding their platform convention in Burlington. It's basically where members of the party are able to come together and submit their ideas as to what policy positions and platforms the party should take as we head into the August primaries. And, you know, reading over some of the high points, you know, on their website, you know, there's certainly themes of, you know, personal responsibility, you know, economic opportunity, you know, safe, healthy communities, education, and healthcare. So those are some of the high points of their platform. But it also, you know, this year too, it because it's an election year, we're going to be able to hear from a number of Republican candidates that are running for, you know, our congressional races in House and Senate on the federal level, but also on the statewide level for lieutenant governor. So I think there's going to be a lot of big names within the Republican Party in Vermont that are going to be at, I believe it's a Doubletree in South Burlington. But I think, certainly while all of those candidates are there, there's going to be a lot of eyes on Governor Scott. He has said, he hasn't made up his decision of when he'll announce. He said, probably after the legislative session. And he said his decision depends on what happens this legislative session. But really, it's not exactly clear what he means by that. So I think, again, it might be one of those wait and see type of concepts.
Well, everybody will be watching and will be listening to see what direction the Vermont GOP takes. I think it's safe to say that the Republican Party on the national level and the Republican Party in the state of Vermont, while they may be blood relatives, they're not identical twins. Would that be safe to say, Calvin?
Yeah, I believe that is a fair assessment. I think, certainly you look at a lot of the candidates here in Vermont and sort of in getting back to the party platform and, what sorts of issues are Republicans campaigning on? I think definitely here in Vermont and at the national level, you're right. Blood relatives is a good comparison, and certainly they are apart at some parts in terms of policy platforms.
Calvin, thank you so much for chatting with us. Great job. We'll be looking forward to chatting with you again at some point in the future, and we greatly appreciate your input here at the stations of Radio Vermont. Calvin Cutler, WCAX TV Channel 3 on the air with us, and he'll be back many, many times in the future. It is now 10 minutes, almost 10 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to take a break and wrap this hour up with a few more thoughts after these words. This is Vermont Viewpoint. Tom Beardsley here filling in on this Monday morning and glad to be here, trying to get back in the saddle, get reoriented, get my legs under myself and carry on with this talk show. Have never actually hosted this show, I don't think, that I can recall, but, well, we'll give it a good college try here. We've got Forbes on the line with us from East Corinth, and Forbes is a regular, calls in periodically. Good to hear from you, Forbes. How you doing?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
If you happen to have a pen in front of you,
I do.
Just jot down $6 plus billion. I can't. And my question is, how... This is allegedly unfunded. Who's paying for this, and how is it being paid for?
You're speaking of the pension plan, correct?
Right.
Yeah. Well, we're paying for it, Forbes. Everybody's paying for it in the state of Vermont.
What method?
Through our taxation, of course.
Through our taxation. You mean the general fund?
I would make that assumption, but I can't say for certain that I'm accurate about that, but that would be my assumption. Is that not the case?
I don't know. That's
oh, okay.
Why I called in.
I thought you were challenging me, but you're legitimately asking the question.
No. Well, I'm challenging to write down $6 billion in a figure on a piece of paper right there, which I can't do.
Yeah, it's pretty daunting, isn't it? Well,
yes,
I believe the state employees contributed to it themselves, but also I believe a portion of it comes from taxation of the population of the state of Vermont. But, boy, feel free to correct me on that. That's only a guesstimate on my part.
Well, it's the unfunded portion that is my concern.
Yeah. Well, at some point it's going to have to be funded or not provided one way or the other. And I think that's what the legislature is grappling with and the governor is grappling with, is to how do we deal with such a thing going forward into the future. You provide benefits to the employees of the state and teachers and so forth. It's part of their contract. It's part of their not only their written contract, but their social contract with the state of Vermont, and it has to be taken care of or it has to be taken off the table. I don't profess to have the answer to it, but it's going to have to happen, and Vermont is not the only state dealing with such a thing. There are other states that are in far deeper water than we are as far as their pension plans are concerned.
Right, right. There's no criticism of what employees are.
Oh, of course not.
Get in a package for compensation. But just the funding of the thing bothers me a little bit. On the average, your home educational tax runs 82 cents on every dollar. is earmarked towards education in local towns. That's a pretty good burden to begin with.
Yeah, indeed. And every town meeting day when these subjects come up, you take a look at these municipal budgets around the state of Vermont, and it's an eye-opener when you realize the municipal budget is a smaller portion of what individual communities are voting on for their budgets. The school budget is really the big one. That's the one that causes the greatest stress and the greatest debate across the board. Is are we going to pass these budgets and continue to raise these budgets or not? And it's a legitimate debate that a lot of people have strong opinions about. But you're right, Forbes. Money, if you're going to have these programs, you've got to pay for them.
Correct. Okay. Well, that was my point of wondering how it is being funded now if it's unfunded.
All right. Forbes, always great to talk to you, and good to hear from Forbes here on the stations of Radio Vermont. He calls in periodically, and we always love to hear from him. He always poses good questions and oftentimes insights to the questions he's posing. It's just a few minutes before 10 o'clock in the morning. We're going to have Louis Mano coming by in the next several minutes to join me in the next hour of Vermont Viewpoint, and Louis and I are going to delve into the deep and murky waters of media in America and in Vermont in particular, and offer some opinions and some thoughts as to where we see media going in the next several years and where it's what it's come to. I have strong opinions about this, and I suspect you do as well. If you want to call in and participate, the phone numbers are 244-1777. That would be locally or on a cell phone. If you're on a landline outside the immediate exchange, you want to call us on 1-877-291-8255. My experience has been primarily with this particular radio station, a few others over the course of the years, but as an observer, just like you, as to what's going on in American media, be it radio, television, newspapers, and now the brand new age that we've all entered in the past 30 years or so of the internet and social media, and we'll be talking about that and where we have come and where we are going in the next hour or so here on Vermont Viewpoint. Anything on your mind, you can certainly give us a call. We'd love to hear from you and chat with you about the subjects that are most important to you. There's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on in the state of Vermont, as we've just heard with Calvin Cutler from Channel 3 about what's happening under the Golden Dome in Montpelier. The legislature in the second year of their biennium hammering out a budget and dealing with pension plans and medical issues and the budget in general and the issues that are facing the state of Vermont and trying to come to some degree of consensus and compromise to move forward. It's a never-ending story that just will not quit. And we've been covering it here at the stations of Radio Vermont for a good many, many years, 90 years now this station has been grappling with the news as it presents itself across the state of Vermont. Tom Beardsley here filling in for Rick on a Monday morning, and Rick will be back tomorrow, as I understand it, and he'll be fielding your questions and no doubt bringing guests. I have to tell you, one of the interesting things about doing this program, I got the call late last week, could you come in and fill in? And I thought to myself, well, yeah, sure, I could do that, but then who am I going to get for a guest? And I started grappling with that notion as who am I going to come up with? And I had some ideas, and one of the ones that leaped to mind immediately was Louis Mano. And Louis and I have not known each other that many years. We've been friendly competitors on the airwaves of radio stations in Vermont for years. And just in the past couple of years, thanks to Bill Sayre's program, I heard Louis one morning and prompted me to call in and chat with him about some of the things that he brought up on the air, and we've become friends since then, and I'm happy to say Louis is going to be here with me in the next hour, and I think it could get ugly, I'll tell you. No, Louis is a good friend, and we're going to have a great time chatting about some issues that are near and dear to our hearts. But right now, we're going to take a break for an update on world and national news from CBS here on Vermont Viewpoint.
We hope you're enjoying this podcast of Vermont Viewpoint with Rick Sengary. You can find podcasts of some of the other programs, including Healthcare Today and The Brady Farkas Show, on our website. In addition, we also have CBS podcasts, including Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley and 60 Minutes. For a full listing of podcasts, visit our website at wdevradio.com.
You're tuned to Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV, FM and AM. Here on WDEV, we've been deeply involved in the news business for a great many years, celebrating beyond 90 years now into our 91st year of broadcasting in the state of Vermont. And, I feel good in saying that it's a proud history of news coverage. And news is what we want to talk about, not what's in the news today, but the news coverage itself on this station and others and across all platforms on media as we look at it in the 21st century. Up until about, 30, 35, 40 years ago, there was basically three major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And then there was the various newspapers, the major ones that were regarded as national newspapers. The New York Times comes to mind. And those media platforms, they pretty much delivered and dictated what the content of news would be, not only in individual states, but across the country. And then, of course, there were local newspapers and local radio stations and television stations like Channel 3, and they all existed. And for the most part, I would say it's safe to say that they basically took the information and delivered it to the public. Unvarnished, no opinions were necessarily expressed. There may have been some bias at some level, and I'll get into that in just a moment, but it was pretty much straightforward news delivery. There's a thing that goes around on Facebook that's kind of tongue-in-cheek that says young people today would be amazed to know that there was a fellow named Walter Cronkite.
Right, I've seen that.
You've seen that, Lee? Where this fellow would go on the air every evening, and he would deliver the news and not express his opinion, and at the end of his newscast, he would say, and that's the way it is, and he would sign off and go away and let the public make up their own minds as to what it is they were viewing and what it is they were consuming as far as news is concerned. And I have an opinion that about 30 years ago, I guess it would be 30 years ago, early 1990s, what I'm thinking, a fellow by the name of Rush Limbaugh came along.
Right.
And that was a game changer. Set aside for a moment what your thoughts are, what your opinions are about Rush Limbaugh and his political views. Just set that over in the corner for just a second and let Louis Mano, my guest here from Mano in the Morning and Mano and Condon and just a star on radio in the Champlain Valley for many years, let us talk to you about where media has come in the past 35 years, because Rush Limbaugh came along and took radio in an entirely new direction. All of a sudden, after the Fairness Doctrine had been set aside by the country, Rush Limbaugh was allowed to go on the air and voice his opinion and set his direction for 3 hours every day, unapologetically.
Right, unashamedly, unapologetically. Yeah, exactly. You know, first of all, WKDR, which was the station that I ran with my friends, was the third Rush Limbaugh affiliate.
Yep.
And Rush took a very deep interest in our success. He knew we were a bunch of former broadcasters that chipped in and bought a radio station, essentially, you know.
What were you thinking? But anyway.
Well, you know, I tell you why we did it. It was not a business move. It was, I used to say to Mark Johnson, who used to occupy this time slot, I used to say if we really wanted to make money, we'd buy a Dunkin' Donuts franchise.
Yeah, I hear you.
But when we bought the radio station, it was at the very beginning of news departments being cut.
Yep.
At the time, radio stations used to get UPI and Associated Press wire service, which actually, as a person that helped pay bills, is very expensive.
Yep.
It's more than two employees to have either one of those services. So while radio stations in the as late as the 80s had full news departments, they went to a formula of having DJs read AP news copy, and one strength of local radio that was really there was now ripped out from under it, because local news is content.
Mm-hmm.
Which everybody's looking for now. Now, at the time Rush Limbaugh came along, there were just news programs. There were a few chat shows, but they were pretty apolitical.
Yeah, pretty benign.
And Rush's premise was that there were biases built into the mainstream media at the time, and it did go a tick or two to the left. And Rush wanted to make up for that by having a more of a right-centered program.
Yeah, and he went.
And it was very innovative, yep. And it was a big shock at the time.
Yeah. But he was so good at it. That's the point I wanted to get to. Regardless of his opinions and what you thought of his opinions, his talent was enormous.
Well, he started out as a disc jockey.
Yeah.
And as you know, radio, very competitive. Yeah. You know, you bite the head off bats to get attention in radio.
And some did.
I can tell you, so I have some stories of things that I did to get attention in radio. One time, just to get, you know, we told people it's sweeps week in radio and we need to get some attention. So we're going to do a stunt today. And the first one I did was cross traffic in Shelburne Road blindfolded. I could really see, but everybody thought I was blindfolded. Another one was ride a horse in traffic to protest them the rising cost of registering a car. We did a lot of stuff like that, a lot of stunts.
Yeah, I remember.
But Rush came up as a disc jockey and an entertainer, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pointing out hypocrisy is good fodder for comedy, I'll tell you.
And what Rush did, he changed the entire media landscape. Because, again, prior to Rush, there were the major networks, and news was considered, it was supposed to be, wasn't necessarily always the case, but it was supposed to be unbiased. And the fact of the matter is, it was never unbiased.
Right.
The reality is, every one of us that goes on the air on a radio station and does a newscast, whether we want to admit it to our audience or to ourselves or not, the reality is our own personal biases come through.
Right.
Now, when I come in here and do the news in the morning, and I pride myself in being what I consider to be an unbiased reporter.
But you make that decision.
Exactly.
That's in your radar. Yeah. That has to be in your radar, exactly, if you're presenting news.
Yeah. So when you go into that newsroom and you rip that AP copy off the machine and you assemble a newscast, you make a decision. Is this story going to be the lead story, or is that story
right.
going to be the lead story?
And what criteria do you use? What's more important for the people to hear? What's more useful for
exactly.
the people to hear?
And you make a judgment based on your own internal belief system as to, is the legislature and the budget the most important story, or is the three-car pileup on the interstate the most important
story?
But
you're making a judgment for how to present the news. You're not tinting it with your opinion.
But I would say that by making a judgment as to what leads and what gets buried, you are, in fact, putting your opinion into it by making that choice.
You are doing that, but why are you doing it? You're doing it for the good of the audience.
From a genuine belief system, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not to further my belief system. It is to present the audience what you think is the most important information on top of the newscast.
That's correct. So for all those years of broadcasting up to the advent of Rush Limbaugh, that was the way news was delivered. Then Rush Limbaugh came along and the floodgates opened and said, we can now do hardcore opinion, right or left, and we can do it unapologetically going forward.
As long as it is differentiated from the straight news, which Rush Limbaugh was, with all the flash, with the rock and roll bumpers,
yep,
with all of the pre-recorded bits that he did,
yep,
with the parody songs.
Yep.
He used all the tools of entertainment to draw attention to his political beliefs.
And there, Louis, is where I see the issue, where things began to change. CNN, when it first went on the air, back whatever year it was a straightforward news operation. Then along came, years later, Fox News.
Right.
And then the division began, and we had the two philosophies separate themselves. We had Fox News on the right and CNN and MSNBC on the left, and they began to deliver the news and not necessarily identify to the listener, the viewer, that this is opinion. They presented it as this is news, but the reality is it has evolved into hardcore opinion broadcasting. And what has happened since then is the entire country, I think because of the way these networks have operated, the entire country has become more and more and more divided. And I believe that what has happened now is we've divided into two camps that are – it's become very polarized. And they're looking at each other across a very broad divide with hostility not right. just open debate.
Well, you mix in tribalism to that formula, you'll wind up with that. I think that when cable news started, it was a very unique form because it was 24-hour news. And as you know, CNN started as like a headline news type of an operation.
Yep.
And you basically watch the same newscast over and over again. Mm-hmm. So they had what they call in the broadcast industry a good sampling rate, a good cume, but not they didn't have long-term viewers. That's when the program started because you can't – like breaking news when they're covering a fire or a riot – there's about 8 facts that initially come out. And the only way they could fill time is to have talking heads on, experts, opinion makers, lawmakers. So they started doing that in cable news to fill in time in between the breaking news. And that's the stuff that became tinged with opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the opinion became more important than the actual content.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Louis, again, I know it was last minute. I'm deeply grateful for you to come on board here this morning.
I wanted to fly my drone in the Waterbury area anyway, which is what I'll be doing after the show.
Hopefully, you'll wait until after we're done.
Okay.
Having a conversation with Louis about media and what's happening in media and where it's going in the next several years. We talked about the divisions that have established themselves in the past few years since the mid or actually early 1990s when Rush Limbaugh came along and the media landscape changed quite a bit. And I want to emphasize to anybody listening, nobody here is saying we're having any kind of a commentary about Rush Limbaugh's political views. It's his talent and what he did to the industry that we're chatting about. And what's happening as we go forward. It's pretty much a fact that media has divided itself to the point where there are two camps, right and left, and there are some gray areas in between, but there is this very stark division between right and left that occurs.
And what a weird business model that is for media. Usually you would want everybody or as many people as possible. And now we have media outlets literally turning off and trashing more than half of the audience.
Yeah, that's right. But they're finding their niche, and they can pay their bills by catering to that niche. And that's what's happening.
I don't know if CNN's paying many bills lately.
Maybe not. Yeah, wasn't that interesting? Just last week, speaking of CNN, CNN Plus.
Well, the Discovery Channel took over CNN. They're a fact-based organization, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they've run documentaries as their primary programming. I think they also have a lot of reality shows too, which aren't real. But, CNN is sending out signals that they're going to get back to the basics and going hard news. We'll see how that works out.
I think this whole episode with CNN Plus, which just happened last week, they spent some $300 million to launch this new social media platform, CNN Plus, which is, I guess, akin to Fox Nation that they rolled out about a year ago, and it failed.
Well, first of all, let's think about this business model. We have a product that is bleeding viewers like on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
And now we're going to charge people to see it.
Yeah.
But the thing about CNN Plus was that the people that started it are unduly influenced by social media. The people that is the power social media has over broadcast. The people that work in broadcasting are also on social media. And I think that they are overly influenced by what goes on in that little world, because that still is a pretty little world compared to the depth and breadth of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a small percentage of people that are on, and they're very tribal people, and a lot of them, that's their social life.
Yeah.
But to be that influenced, they're influencing television networks that everybody's watching just by a handful of people on social media, and that's why it's all going so wrong.
Yeah. You mentioned something while we were taking a break. You mentioned the unifying aspect of broadcast many years ago, and I can draw one example that I think fits what you're talking about. Do you remember the night, and I'm sure you do, when the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show? Everybody saw that.
65 million people tuned in for that.
Everybody saw
it. And that was a shared experience because 65 million people tuned in to that at the same time. Which is different than getting 65,000 hits.
Yeah,
65 million hits.
So there were the Beatles, and they burst onto the scene through the Ed Sullivan Show and other media outlets at the time, Jack Parr, I guess, they were on some other programs, but that was the one single moment when everybody tuned in, and here was this new phenomenon in entertainment, the Beatles appearing on television on Sunday evening, and as you very rightly pointed out, it was all at the same time. It was happening in real time. And their music went across AM radio at the time,
right.
Maybe some FM, but mostly AM radio. And it didn't matter what radio station you were listening to because there were a handful of formats. But most radio stations back in those days, Louis, tried to reach the broadest audience they could.
All broadcast outlets.
With a middle-of-the-road format is what it was called. We'll play a little country. We'll play a little rock and roll.
Right.
We'll play a little big band or whatever it might have been. But it was a broad selection of music, and the Beatles cut across all platforms.
They did.
Today, it couldn't happen.
Now everything's a niche.
Exactly. Everything is so divided down to its smallest unit that the Beatles, or a phenomenon like the Beatles, it just couldn't happen today. Well, since then, social media has come along, and when you're looking at Facebook or Twitter or whatever other social media platform you're looking at, it's a very small group of people that are seeing the same thing you're seeing.
It is, and you're getting the impression that it's the whole world.
Exactly.
And therein lies the rub.
And that's where your belief system becomes skewed because you have a false impression of what's going on in the world.
You do.
Yeah. And that's the part that's interesting.
I mean, even on a social level, you have a false impression of the lives of the people you know because people always seem fascinating on social media, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's doing the coolest stuff and buying the coolest things and eating the best food.
Yeah. We're going to continue with our prattling on about all these topics, but I want to give Margaret a chance to weigh in here. Margaret in Burlington is on the line with us. Good morning, Margaret.
Hi, guys. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What do you have for us?
Well, I was listening to what you guys said, and it just struck me that when these networks talk on either, especially on television, CNN and even Fox and MSNBC, that they appeal to emotion. It's either to make you feel good because you agree with them, or to make you feel really angry because you agree with them on their criticism, instead of putting out facts. And I think even our main TV shows, local news stations, do it. For instance, when they report on, budgets, what is the cost of all the pensions? What is the cost of all the salaries? Who's getting the big salaries? How does our tax base get affected? All these facts are ignored by saying, oh, look how good we are. We're doing this for this group, or we're doing that for that.
With local television, I think that is more laziness than anything else. That's just rewriting a press release and not adding new facts to it. That's all that is.
Well, it's terrible because people don't – for instance, here in Burlington – what is the power of the unions for voters? How many voters in the city are city employees? I mean, how about some factual stuff? It doesn't take that much effort to look it up.
You'd be surprised, though, Margaret, how much effort it does take. It takes, if you want to do it from an original standpoint and go to the source, it requires physically going somewhere and listening in and sitting through boring committee meetings and gatherings and sorting through voluminous information to sort out those facts and figure out what's going on. It's not as easy as one might think.
Well, back in the old days,
The library will give you quite a bit of information.
Or you could use source material, but also go to the original source. You could use the AP story, but you can make a phone call and add something to it. That's what radio news used to be really good at.
And, you know, the thing is, in the early days of my career, and I'm sure Louis did the same thing, maybe, I don't know, I can't say in his career, but I remember having to go to school board meetings and sit there through these incredibly boring, tedious, pedantic sessions and figure out what was going on. And I remember coming out of some of those meetings thoroughly confused because I didn't know what the budget was all about and where what the history of the story was. But it was very, very hard work. And to do it right, you have to go beyond going to the library or beyond reading an Associated Press news release. You have to go directly to the source of the information and figure out what happened for yourself. And it's hard. It's hard to do.
Or even, well, then in that case, you could say this takes a lot of research because we do not know A, B, and C about the issue. They could at least tell the voters or the citizens or the listeners what they don't know or what we all don't know or what the officials won't tell us.
That's why there are shows like this.
Yeah. And it is hard.
Thank heaven.
Yeah, it is hard because it costs money. If you want to have somebody sitting at a city council meeting or a board of aldermen meeting or a school board meeting or any other committee, you've got to pay that individual by the hour to be there doing that job. And in today's media market, you know, there's not a lot of radio stations, using radio as the example, that can afford to do that. It's very tough to make ends meet. That's why WDEV is such such an important radio station, I think, in the broadcast landscape of Vermont, because we still try to do those things.
Still have people here.
Yeah, real people behind the microphone, as opposed to just playing syndicated talk shows. And not to take anything away from syndicated talk shows, they serve their purpose and they're very important. But if you want to get into the local issues and what's going on locally, somebody's got to be at that meeting. Somebody's got to go out and cover that story and bring back the information. Thank you for calling in, Margaret. We appreciate your thoughts.
You know, Tom, I believe that there is – I have some thoughts on that. I believe it is possible to cover things and do it within a reasonable business model. I believe it is. Because there's a lot of people that we have a gig economy now. There are a lot of people that are qualified to go out and cover things, and you could leverage the audience to
I think in the old days we called them stringers.
That's right.
Yeah. We're going to go on with this conversation and talk about those issues and more in just a couple of minutes. We've got a hard break coming up here at the bottom of the hour for an update from CBS News on what's happening in the world around us. And we'll chat some more about broadcast and print and social media and lots more in the next half hour here on Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Tom Beardsley. Louis Mano is my guest this morning. Glad to have Louis on board. And hopefully you'll call in 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Back in a couple of minutes.
In decades past, you opened a business, hung out your shingle, and the customers came. Today, hanging out your shingle means creating an engaging website. The modern consumer is using the internet to find businesses like yours. Are you positioned so you'll rise to the top of their search? Let the Radio Vermont Group Digital Services work with you to make sure you're visible online and to target your marketing to location, demographic, and interest. Learn more at rvgdigital.com.
Thank you very much for joining us here on Vermont Viewpoint, here on WDEV, FM and AM on a Monday morning. I'm Tom Beardsley. Louis Mano is here with me, and we're chatting about media in general and local media in particular, and we'll get back to that conversation in a moment. But speaking of locally owned and Vermont owned, let's talk about Vantage Press. Vantage Press opened their doors in 1973, and they offer fast, accurate, professional, and cost-effective, very important, high-quality printing services for the Champlain Valley. They're on North Street in Burlington, and they're printing everything but money. We've talked to them about that, but they just won't give. You can find them at VantageVermont.com. At Vantage Press, they're excited to introduce their new lineup of products. If you want to create an eye-catching graphic display for your home or business, call and ask about Re-Tack Wall Graphics. Get that right. Re-Tack Wall Graphics. It's self-adhesive and ultra-removable, which is important in case you change your mind. Adhesive backing, making it easily removed and repositioned over and over again. And it's only at Vantage Press on North Street in Burlington at VantageVermont.com or by calling the old-fashioned way, 802-863-4998. That's 802-863-4998. Vantage Press, the people you want to talk to. You know those folks, Louis?
You know, they're not too far from where I live.
Yeah, and that's what
I always think when I'm at the stoplight there that it's nice that there's still a locally owned printing company.
Yeah.
Because everybody sends their printing out over the internet.
That's right. Yeah, so right nearby. Hey, you want to call us? It's 244-1777 locally or toll-free from anywhere in the known universe at 877-291-8255. Let's talk, Louis, briefly or maybe at length about what this new world of media, this brave new world of media, is doing to the body politic of not only the state of Vermont but the entire country. I'm of the opinion that political leaders in this country today are very different than the political leaders that you and I grew up with many years ago, the John F. Kennedys, the Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Yes, it's a different world. Not a lot of statesmen out there right
now. And I'm of the opinion that the political leadership in this country have pushed politics from being public service into being almost a blood sport. I think what we have are the divided camps of right and left that are far more interested, at least the perception is, they're far more interested in winning the game, in playing the political game and seizing the turf and winning the battle for their party and for their own political position rather than what's in the best interest of the country. And that brings me to a pet peeve of mine, a subject that is near and dear to my heart that I feel very strongly about, and that is term limits. Because as long as political leaders are focused on the next election, they're making decisions, I believe, based on what's popular as opposed to what's right. The most popular kid in school was not necessarily the smartest kid in school or the person in school that had the highest moral standards. The most popular person was the most popular person because they did things
that pleased people and not necessarily were the best things.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I think that's where our politics has come. And I think the media has paved the road to that place. What do you think?
I agree with you. There's a couple of ways of looking at this. First of all, there's with regards to social media, there are the people that grew up without it, like us. And then there are the people that have had it their entire life. And I think a lot of the younger politicians are more into playing the game than into being a statesman because they are buoyed by social media. Social media has too much influence on individuals. They really believe that that represents a large body of thought, and it really doesn't. Not the whole world is not sitting staring at their phone every single day. And, you know, for me, I mean, the way you and I use social media, we use it just as an extension of ourselves to say hi to our friends, to maybe share a thought or an insight. And it's just a part of the tableau of our lives. It's not our entire lives. But this social media is driving politics right now, and it's something that we have to sit down and figure out.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that's happening. And again, I'm a bit cynical about it because, again, as I watch politics and I pay attention to politics and the governance of this country, it really does strike me that you mentioned some of the younger leadership. I think a great deal of the problem has to do with the older leadership. And I'm not going to name names here, but on the right and the left of either of the two major parties.
Yeah, you do see the same people always. But what about term limits? All politics is local.
Yeah.
And, for example, Pat Leahy, whether you agree or disagree with his politics, has always brought home a lot of pork to Vermont.
Well,
and you have to be well connected to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because it was one of the things I thought about as I was preparing to do this program. You're absolutely right. The seniority system in the United States Senate allows a guy like Senator Leahy to bring a lot of pork back to Vermont. That's great for Vermont. It's a terrific thing. It gives us influence that's greater than our population would normally have, being a very small state. But is it really the best thing for the country? Because if there's a Pat Leahy here, there's a Robert Byrd, or there's a Strom Thurmond.
That's why they say all politics is local.
Exactly.
Yes.
And they bring the pork back to their state, so they did. I mentioned two names of fellows that are no longer around, and I picked those two names on purpose
right,
to say that there's the balance and counterbalance to everything. Well, there's a Patrick Leahy in Vermont. There's another senator in some other state that's bringing the pork home to their state. And that senator is also there making decisions and voting on issues and proposing bills and writing bills that may be at great variance from your views right. and your values. So term limits would say stop being popular and start being right. Start being responsible to the people of the entire country as opposed to just being the popular kid.
Clearly, it's a balance of both.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan was very popular.
Yeah.
And he was very much a statesman.
Yeah.
So it is clearly a function of both. But what it has to do with is, I think, the undue influence of social media on people.
Yeah.
It gives people the impression that people's social climb just by reposting something that is very politically indigestible, because among their tribe, they are, you know, they're lauded for it. People weigh in on things that they really shouldn't be weighing in on all the time. I see this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I post something that may be a little political, I often wonder when people repost to argue with me, it's like, are you trying to change my worldview? Because I kind of like my worldview.
Yeah.
It used to be people accepted that people had different worldviews. And it's, I think because people take politics too personally now, because politics is basically an avatar for your own personal hopes and dreams. So if somebody dumps on your candidate, they're in a sense dumping on you.
It's personal. Yeah. We're going to continue our conversation, but right now we want to invite a listener to stop in via the telephone lines. David is on the line from Richmond. David, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you both, two voices that are very familiar that I've been listening to for a long time. Good to hear again.
Well, thank you. What do you have on your mind this morning?
Well, I'm calling about what you're talking about, the tribalism and the discourse that is just so awful. But I want to challenge WDEV. I'm a loyal listener. I love to listen to the morning newscast. But all the morning newscasts are filled with traffic accidents and robberies and murders and examples of where we don't get along. And I'm hoping that at least once a morning there will be a story of a pet that was found or a kid that was adopted or people with diverging viewpoints that found a place in the middle to find a compromise. I don't know if that stuff comes up on the UPS wire, but you might have to go out and find it. But I think that we need, and especially our young people need, examples of positive stories and stories where people find a way to get along.
You know, David, that's a very interesting point that you've made, and it goes back to a fundamental problem in media and news coverage in general. And
when it bleeds, it leads.
That's exactly right. That's exactly the point. If it bleeds, it leads. The nature of news is incidents or occurrences that are out of the ordinary.
Well, now people getting along would be out of the ordinary.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's a valid point.
So that could be a thing worthy of coverage.
Yeah, that is a valid point.
But, you know, it does happen every day. People do reach consensus every day. People do get along every day. Republicans and Democrats hug each other every single day.
Yeah.
We just don't see it anymore.
Right. So how do we get to see it?
Well, one way not to do it is to say we have a good news website where we only show good news, because people would think that's lame and not go to it.
Nobody would watch it.
I think it needs to be worked into the regular news. I really do. I agree with you. And the way to start doing that is people at this radio station, WDEV, when they see an incident like that, they need to highlight it. It starts at home.
And, you know,
I'm asking for is one positive story a morning.
Yeah. I think, David, not to sound defensive, and I'm not a full-time employee of WDEV anymore. I'm just a fill-in guy that shows up a couple of times a year. But I think all fairness, this radio station does do that in its normal course of activities. If you listen to this radio station on a daily basis, you'll find in programs like The Trading Post and some of the conversations in the morning and some of the interviews. You know,
music to go to the dump
by. What I'm talking about is the newscast that I listen to every morning with Joel and just give me a story that I can point to and say, well, you know what? We're getting along.
That was uplifting.
We can do it. It's uplifting. Exactly.
Yeah. That's a valid point, David. We appreciate you calling in and sharing that with us. And I think you've raised a valid point.
Louis, Tom, great to hear your voices. Please stick around.
Terrific. Well,
thank you.
Thank you for the kind comments. But I think, Louis, it does happen here. David raises a good point, and I've said this all along, but the reality is news. And if you put happy news on it, nobody's going to be listening.
Right, exactly. If you say, we only give good – I mean, there are a few websites like that. I'm sure they're not racking up hits.
Yeah. But David's point is valid.
Oh, it is valid. And I think just by – in general, within – embedded in the program is that community spirit here, I think.
Yeah. You know, Louis, as you look at the history of communication, and I've thought about this a lot – when Gutenberg invented the movable type and the printing press, many people consider that to be a major turning point in world history. And it was.
Yes.
Because the peasants suddenly had access to the written word. And books were very valuable.
And then it made all knowledge collective knowledge.
Exactly. And it changed the course of history. And it made it was a leveling of the playing field for everybody.
Right.
Kings and queens, as well as peasants, had access to the written word.
I'm sure it changed people on a human level. Like, for example, I believe that people dream differently since the advent of motion pictures than they did before motion pictures. I think people dream in parallel editing.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. The point I was going to get to is that was in the 15th century, 14th century,
right,
that Gutenberg invented movable type in the printing press. I think we're in a similar era right now with the advent of digital media. I think the first couple of decades of the 21st century, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, will be viewed as similar to the advent of the printing press.
Right. I agree.
See where I'm going.
And we don't even know
what the
implications of this are. We don't even know what the implications of this are. At the beginning of major changes in society, people don't have a chance to sit down and figure out what the implications of it are.
Yeah.
But I think what the implications so far are is that everybody has a place to voice their opinion. People who are creators have a place to display their creations. There are a lot of tools for creators, and everybody really is a creator. Anybody that has ever told a story in their life or cooked something or fixed something or made something is a creator. And so now we have this worldwide marketplace where everybody is essentially on an even playing field. For example, when we owned WKDR, we were probably the smallest budget station ever in the history of Vermont. And, you know, we charged $10, $8 each for ads. We didn't have a lot of money there. Had we had the internet, because WKDR created a lot of original content, 75% of what we put out was made by us.
Mm-hmm.
If we had the platforms to push that content out, you know, we'd all be doing a lot better right now than we are.
Yeah.
You know, this is a good thing. It just depends on – it's like any other tool. It depends on how you use it. You can build a house with a hammer or you can kill somebody.
Yeah.
It depends on how you use it. The way you and I use it, we just use it as an extension of our social life, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's a valid way to look at it. And I think what's happening is – we're still in a state of it's in its infancy right now.
Social media is
brand new. It's been 30 years now that it's been evolving.
And now we have metaverse to deal with.
Okay, go ahead. Delve in there. Metaverse.
Well, I mean, I did get the headset for Christmas, and I, you know, as a an observer of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it's a weird toy that takes you away from everything. It takes you away from reality. I mean, in a huge way. Tactilely, you are not, you're sitting in your living room, but you could be sitting in the savannah or in the middle of outer space. I don't know what the implications of that's going to be, but I personally don't like being in the metaverse. I like the real world a little. I just find it, it's just doesn't satisfy all of my tactile needs as much as the real world does.
So this is a device that you're now using?
Yeah, well, it's a toy.
I mean,
it's called the Quest 2. It's a virtual reality headset.
Okay.
You put it on, and you get fully immersed in whatever you're looking at.
I got to see this.
Next time we get together, I'll bring it over so you can play with it.
Yeah.
It's very interesting because it has heavy implications. I don't really know what they quite are yet.
Yeah, I don't think any of us know what the implications of what we've been talking
people
about.
People are buying
morning.
Real estate yep. in the metaverse right now, and they don't even know
Isn't
why.
Amazing? Yeah, isn't that amazing? Sight unseen, not physically
right.
seeing a property.
But it's not property.
Yeah,
it's not property.
Interesting. We're talking about media, where it's going, where it's been, what is happening with media. Louis Mano is my guest this morning on Vermont Viewpoint. And Louis, we talked about the tribalism, the divisions, and how stark those divisions are in politics, and how it's become not as much, in my estimation, as much public service as it is a game or a sport or a competitive
endeavor. It is a game because I don't see people that opposed to each other when they're talking face to face. Do you?
That's interesting because when you are face to face, it tempers your emotions a little bit.
Well, you're in a feedback loop.
Yeah.
You're looking at a person's face. You're picking up the micro expressions.
There are consequences.
You're
dealing with them directly as opposed to through this mysterious thing called the
internet.
People
start out with character in the first place. I think they display character online.
Yeah, I suppose, but I think they display it more in person.
True.
Yeah.
But it's easy. You're right. It is easy to have a lapse of character when there's no implications.
That's right. When it's anonymous, it's distant, and it's removed from your immediate reality, it's easy to be insulting. It's easy to be crude. It's easy to be unkind. Whereas when you're facing someone face-to-face, you want to smile, you want to be accepted, you want to be greeted, and I think it changes everything.
Good rule of thumb is only talk to people who use their real name.
There you go.
That is a good rule of thumb.
So what are you doing with your business lately? You have a whole new aspect of media that you're involved in personally.
Well, I'm a maker, you know. It's I take some of the skills that I had from my career, and I just apply them to the current landscape to try and make a few bucks.
And what are you making?
I own a small media company.
Yeah.
I started out doing videos, industrial videos, television commercials, so forth and so on. And then I started doing voices for video games. And then right now I'm just basically a freelance voice actor now.
So who are you working for?
Well, I work for radio stations.
Yeah.
I'm in the corn kiosk at the Nebraska State Fair. I do voice work, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
You give me a piece of paper and pay me some money and I'll read what's ever on it convincingly.
And how do you find clients?
I have an online, through an online marketplace where people are looking for certain voices for certain projects and then you audition.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at the marketplace, you see what fits your style. And it usually takes 20 or 30 auditions before I get a gig.
So is this a full-time occupation
for you? It's what I do right now. It's not really full-time. It's two-third time occupation.
Yeah, so you
I'm semi-retired.
So you have a full-blown studio that you work in?
Yeah, it's got pretty much everything this place has in it,
yeah.
You know.
Hopefully
and,
better than this.
Yeah, well, you know, I have the same microphones, the RE20s.
Yeah.
These beautiful microphones.
The workhorse of the industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just email my workout. You know, I work for radio stations, and they send me some slogans to read, and I read them. And you can hear me locally in Burlington on Cool 105 if you're out. I don't know if it's okay to mention that.
That's fine, yeah. Of course it is. So when was the last time you were actually on the air doing
radio show?
Yeah.
2001 mm-hmm. was the last time I did that. It was at my Jim Condon and I worked many years together, did a radio show. We sold the radio station and I bought a deli.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Squire, who acquired the radio station at the time, said, hey, we'd like you to do your show from the deli.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that for about a year.
Yep.
And the deli part of the business just got too busy, so, you know, we moved on.
Is the deli still there?
It's now a noodle house.
Okay. All right. So life goes on.
Life does go on.
I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on board this
morning.
Oh,
my pleasure.
I hope it's been interesting for our audience. It certainly has been interesting for me to chat with you because you always bring dimensions to the conversation that I would never think of.
I want to say hi to my friends out there and say if you want to stay in touch, you can find me on Facebook.
All right. Louis Mano, a radio legend from the Burlington market, the Champlain Valley, spent many years on the radio. It was prior to OKO, right? It was Q99,
right.
Where Louis made his bones, so to speak, and at least in this market. He had other areas.
Oh, yeah, I've been around.
You've been around
by
for
the time
a while.
I got here.
And then, of course, most recently on WKDR and now as an independent producer. This is Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Tom Beardsley, and hopefully I'll be back again doing some remote broadcasts and some fill-in work over the course of the summer months on WDEV, and we'll hopefully cross paths again. But right now we're going to wrap things up for this program and move on to CBS News for an update on what's happening in the world, and then various other talk shows over the course of the afternoon on the stations of Radio Vermont. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Beards.